1230 AM, W255DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump's so-called Liberation Day tariffs are blocked. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
A decision by the Federal Trade Court today that blocked President Trump from imposing sweeping tariffs may be the most significant blow to the administration so far.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio says some Chinese students in the U.S. are about to lose their visas. CBS's Olivia Gazis.
China is one of the top source countries for international students in the United States. The Chinese embassy didn't immediately respond to a request for comment.
A judge in Minnesota sentences two men to multiple years in prison for smuggling Indian nationals into Canada and sneaking them into the U.S. in brutal winter conditions. A family of four died. Acting U.S. Attorney Lisa Kirkpatrick.
The defendants sent into that weather 11 migrants. Indian nationals were not dressed appropriately, were ill-prepared for the weather they faced that night.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Brewers complete the sweep. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, another dramatic win for the crew. Last night it was Christian Yelich and a walk-off grand slam home run in extra innings. Today, Caleb Durbin with a sack fly to center field that drove in Sal Frelick in the bottom of the 10th. The final, the Brewers beating the Red Sox 6-5 at AmFam Field, completing a three-game sweep of Boston. The team has tomorrow off before heading to Philadelphia for a weekend series against a tough team, the Phillies. Here in Green Bay, Packers OTAs continue on the offensive line with Elgton Jenkins holding out for a new deal. Right guard Sean Ryan moved over to center.
I think we're confident in him. He's been training like this for a couple years now. So one of the benefits I would say that we do in regards to how we practice by splitting the fields up, you're going to get more reps in less amount of time. I mean, there's a lot of tape to watch.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. In Green Bay with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Richard Trent, the executive director of Main Street Alliance.
This current tax code that they're trying to extend, 80%+ of the benefit goes to the top 1% of earners.
Yes.
I did not misspeak there. This is not a game. Trump will tell you firsthand that he grew up believing there are winners and there are losers. This is an administration actively trying to create a class of losers, and we have to fight back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Full Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Hope everyone had a happy Memorial Day weekend here at the program. We took a couple of days to enjoy the holiday, to celebrate it the way I think we would all agree it should be. Remembering those folks who gave their lives for our freedoms, remembering relatives who have served this country and, well, have sacrificed. Remembering the true sacrifices. So when I saw our president in his Happy Memorial Day to All message, you know, including the scum that spent the last 4 years trying to destroy our country. Yeah, that's what he wrote. Happy Memorial Day, scum. You, Americans, you people who suffered and sacrificed, you, because maybe you disagreed with him. I was going to read the whole thing, and I just can't. I just can't work through. Especially on Memorial Day, the kind of vile comments coming from our president. I mean, it's mind-blowing that anyone would read that and go, this is a functional person, that this is the kind of person you would want in the White House. The last administration, oh, they're incompetent. Anyone who disagrees with him is a hating judge. They're monsters who disagree with him. And then finishes it up with, God bless America. Weird, bizarre, twisted, touched, or just plain evil, but took the occasion to praise himself. Evidently, you know, bringing home the Summer Olympic Games and the World Cup soccer tournament. Evidently, that's That's right up there with the ultimate sacrifice, fighting for freedom. Evidently, his big, beautiful military parade for his birthday celebration, you know, that's right up there with honoring fallen soldiers and all of that. Because, hey, his political wins, much, much more important. And you think about the amount of money that's going to be spent on this big, beautiful dictator parade. It's quite impressive that we have the kind of cash to be able to fund this. That all of the tanks, 28 M1A1 Abrams tanks, they're going to roll right down. 28 Stryker armored personnel carriers, more than 100 other vehicles, a World War II B-25 bomber, 6,700 soldiers, 50 helicopters, 34 horses, 2 mules, and a dog. And if I could get my wife to be able to pet the mules, that would be beautiful. But that's not going to happen because we're not going to get anywhere near it. And how are we paying for it? Well, we're going to pay for it by taking food out of the mouths of children. And you wonder why people are going, this is a fascistic dictatorship that we're heading into. That our dear leader, who is the most transparent pay-for-play president ever. You wonder why Ray Dalio, the billionaire, came out and said that. How do you put it? He said, when I say that the policies President Trump is using to make America great again are remarkably like the policies that those of the hard right countries of the 30s used, that should not be controversial. That guy should make you go, how do we stop it? And with Memorial Day weekend now in the rearview mirror, the question then becomes, what are we going to do? What are we going to do to protect not just our freedoms, but our children's freedoms and our grandchildren's freedoms and the freedoms that we've taken for granted that would be passed on for future generations? What are we going to do now that we have the dictator and king? How are we going to respond? Especially what just transpired by this president again. What are we going to do? That becomes the question. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back with Bob Nag.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Still shaking my head over the Memorial Day message from Donald Trump. Happy Memorial Day to all, including the scum. You know, anybody who disagrees with him is scum, evidently. On policy, evidently. And there's a moment where I was reading through this. I'm going, you know, I got to be honest. If Donald Trump doesn't think you're scum, maybe you're not doing it right. I mean, it's just sad. And the whole Memorial Day weekend really was about him. Sad. I'm here to share some thoughts on, well, that and, well, the week ahead. I've asked my good friend Bob Nay to come share some thoughts. Bob's a former Ohio congressman, political analyst. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what did you think of the weekend of the Trump Memorial weekend and all of the what would have sunk any other politician in the history of humanity? What'd you think of it?
I don't know what to think in the sense that I lived in an era in the recent past where, you know, on Memorial Day, you folk, especially if you were in politics, if you were in an elected position, you can go to your cookouts and things, but you focused on what the day's about, which is, you know, the people that made the ultimate sacrifice. And Rick, I probably in 24 years of elected office, you know, probably gave, I don't know if I had to guess, you know, 300-400 some speeches over, sometimes I would do 5 and 6 and 7 in a day on Memorial Day. And of course, different Veterans Day and things like that. And you always had to be and should be very, very careful in those speeches that you stayed to the topic at hand, which are the veterans.
Right.
You didn't, no matter what, if you're in an election year or a presidential election year, you didn't ever get into any of that. And if you did, it was certainly the kiss of death to politicize anything to do with Memorial Day, Veterans Day, you know, Flag Day, anything. But he, you know, he did it. He went off script or on script or whatever he wanted to do. Plus, you know, wearing the hat.
No, he's always done it. This is the thing. This is not new. And this is where I'm like, you know, am I surprised? No, this is what he does. This is who he is. He can't put someone else first.
But like I said, you used to have to be very, very cautious. And this type of thing would just take somebody else and take him right out of office.
I mean, do I care that he brought the Summer Olympics to the U.S. or the World Cup to the U.S.? No, not on Memorial Day. Not when you're talking about dead soldiers. No. Do I care about his big, beautiful parade coming to D.C.? No, I don't. But this was the center, and this is what got the most attention. And again, I go back to what he does masterfully. He sucks all the air out of the room for himself. And I got to think, you know, all of those families who have lost loved ones over the years, I got to think that you a little miffed, maybe.
Well, as you know, the reaction to it, the applause was contained. Now, one thing I've known over the years of being in office and being in Congress in particular and around the troops is that a lot of the troops won't even express what they think about a president or an administration. I've been with troops overseas.
And you shouldn't.
And they don't. And you know what? You don't ask them. But they don't do that. In all the years I was around troops that have an opinion, if you say, well, you know, what's your opinion? They would make it very, very clear they support the commander in chief, whoever it is. And then they would give maybe an opinion of how we should do certain things in the military or some type of opinion on, you know, a war situation, but nothing, you know, against the commander in chief. So he's going to still get acceptance by no one yelling or booing in that, you know, crowd. But obviously it was a tempered response. You could tell that it was tempered.
Yeah. But hey, the big parade's coming up next month, his 79th birthday. We're going to celebrate Trump's 79th birthday with a big, beautiful parade. It's going to cost, you know, what'd they say, $45 million to put on?
Everything costs so much money.
What a better way to spend $45 million that you've taken out of the mouths of children by cutting the SNAP program in your big, beautiful bill than wasting it on a parade.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was something I think he suggested the first term, and they never did it, if I remember correctly.
No, he's been wanting this for a while. This is one of those things. Well, Putin's got a parade. Kim Jong's got a parade. Why not me? We're gonna have our dear leader's gonna get his parade. I wanted to ask you about the big beautiful bill that eked by. Thoughts on does this get through the Senate as is? Do you think there'll be some major cuts? What do you see in there?
This one is fascinating because in the one committee they're talking about not doing much to it, but other committees are talking about making some changes to it. Now, everything they're contemplating, because it is the Senate, has to go through the parliamentarian, because that's the rule of reconciliation bills. And the Senate does this, and this makes me sick with every party that controls the Senate. They talk about the nuclear option. You know, we're going to do this without the cloture rule or the filibuster. They make it so dramatic, like a John F. Kennedy Profiles in Courage series or something, which it's not. And they have to fit into this parliamentarian rule. I mean, it's just, I just think it's an antiquated system, but it allows the Senate to escape certain things that they can't and processes they can't normally do. So they're going to make, you know, some cautious changes originally. Now, all of a sudden you throw in President Trump, who in the last couple of days said, you know, yes, Senate can do whatever it wants. You've got Speaker Johnson saying it's a tight margin over here. You can't make a lot of fundamental changes because reconciliation, House and Senate has to match in particular a certain way. And along comes Trump and says, yeah, whatever you want to do. So Johnson must be pulling his hair out. We'll see. I don't think they can change it a lot. They're just going to have to bite the political bullet and put most of it through as best they can.
Yeah. And look, you know, the people who are going to be hurt by it, and this is what I keep saying, the suffering, the solutions for our problems are going to come out of their suffering, the suffering caused by their savagery, because there's a lot in this bill. You know, I saw Mike Johnson over the weekend doing the talking head circuit, you know, saying, oh, we're not making any cuts. We're just getting rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. No, we're not taking food out of the mouths of children. We're just going to make states have skin in the game, which means you're taking food out of the mouths of children. No matter how you slice this game, you're still doing that. But they have such nice words.
It's not a fiscally responsible process. Now, I understand reconciliation is paying for last year's. I understand that. You know, the Congress is a year late always. But they don't do budgets. And it's sad.
Right.
When I was in Congress for the right or the wrong of it, the budgets were done. We had a lot of Democrat amendments, you know, for the most part that were, you know, were able to introduce. We had some amendments that, you know, that passed. You had some of the budget provisions that had bipartisan votes, depending on, you know, what the agency was. But you had a much better open process, much thorough process. If there were cuts, it was laid on the table, discussed, and then you had to be accountable for a vote. You know, with this reconciliation bill, you got one big vote on one big, beautiful bill. And look, that's cover because you're not voting for individual items and you're just, well, voting for the process. And you can answer, well, I, you know, overall, it was okay, except for those few things. When you do a budget, everything's accountable to a vote. That's why they don't do it. Now, I think the House is going to be more affected politically by the bill than the Senate, with marginal seats for the Republicans. They're going to have to worry about it. You know, like anything, a lot of, you know, not all the Senate's up for election like the House. Right. So probably some of the Republicans in the House will struggle a little bit more than some of the members of the Senate.
Yeah, my favorite response was Chip Roy. Who said, you know, it's I'm going to keep fighting this bill, but he voted for it. I'm going to keep fighting this bill, but, you know, he voted for it. I'm going, when are you going to fight for it after it passes? You know, because he was.
Chip Roy and Massey were correct. I mean, it does add to the deficit.
Massively.
But, you know, Massey, I think, you know, will always hold to the no vote. But, yeah, Roy had his day and had his phone call. And there's the other thing. And I don't know if Roy got anything or not, but when I was there, I was part of the whip team. There were 13 deputy whips many, many times. And anybody wants to say this isn't true is not telling the truth. Many times I would go to the members assigned to me because they would split up members. And maybe sometimes I'd have one or two, maybe five each. It depends. And you go to them, Rick, and you would say, oh, well, you know, what do you like about this amendment? And then they would tell you what they liked or not. And then they would say, well, I don't know if I could vote for this. Then you'd say, what do you need? Yep. You need a fundraiser from the president. You need a fundraiser from the speaker. Do you need an amendment somewhere? Do you need a bridge? You know, what do you need? So the purists who I won't vote for this bill and they do, time will tell, you know, did they get something in return?
Yeah, no, and like it or not, that's how the system has always worked. You get that horse trading, you got what you wanted, and hopefully it benefited your community, and hopefully that you sold out the rest of the country for your little sliver of it, because that's how it's always been. But you know, again, these are the people who said we can't do that, Bob. They're the ones who did away with the pork barrel spending and the walking around money and all of that, those other things that you know past generations have operated on.
Well, also, you know, with the Democrats, we had an ability to, let them have some type of say in the system.
Right.
And a lot of times I was there when Republicans would say to me, well, how come the Democrats got these items in the bill? Well, because we had mutual votes, common interests came together. Now, you do that today, you're a traitor. That's why speakers get thrown out. You got to do it with Republican-only votes.
No.
Well, that's a catch in the system, too, because those Republican-only votes are just a small group of people that want things. This is not all philosophical. They want things.
I got to get your thoughts on this as well. I saw this story came out. Evidently, a bunch of rich people are putting together a kind of a group. It's called the executive branch, and evidently, David Sachs, I guess, is the guy who's head of it. The White House's crypto czar. Evidently, this private group in Georgetown is going to cost about $500,000 to get involved in. So you don't have to worry about pesky reporters or people you don't trust or lobbyists, people who are going to report what you say privately, so that they can have direct access right to the president. It's interesting because, you know, Trump's media company's going in all on crypto. The Trump family's going in all in on crypto. Crypto bros have got a lot of power. I know there's some interesting AI stuff coming on. A group like this, what kind of interests would this serve the working class of this country, having this much power in the hands of our crypto bros?
Well, it's narrow interest and their vested interest. It's just like the tariffs. Look, Trump rolled out the tariffs in the wrong direction, all at once, worldwide, et cetera. And I understand it was a bad rollout. Some of the tariffs are good, but putting the tariffs aside, there was a small group of people, they may not be part of this club, maybe they are, or maybe they will be, and they manipulate the system. They manipulate the market, you know, for what they want. They're not concerned about working people and we better take the market down. No, they take the market down, then they buy low, and then they made a lot of money probably in the last month. They're out there. Now, they're kind of codifying it into a law by actually announcing an official group. It's sort of like the kitchen cabinet for the rich. And for years, a lot of this was done where you had your special group, and if you contributed X amount of money, then you got the picture and you got the lunch day, you know, with whoever, the Congress people or the president. But of course, this is going to take it to a new level because we have more uber rich in America, super rich,
yep,
than we've ever had before. And they're able to, less people have more money at the top of the food chain, in the sense that, you know, they're uber rich. And they have the ability to really come together as a smaller group and influence the way things move, which, of course, makes them richer.
Which is how, you know, a party that believes in states' rights put a line in the big, beautiful bill that will preempt states from passing any AI legislation for the next decade. And you go, well, they spent $500,000 to join a group. They spent, you know, Elon Musk, $280 million to influence an election. You know, why are they spending all this money? Having states not be able to regulate AI or pass any legislation on AI is an enormous payback for all of these rich people who have bought and paid for the best democracy money can buy. That's the return on investment, because this scares me, because AI to me is the end of humanity as we know it. It's time to smash the machine, in my view.
Well, and you're right. And the article that just came out in the last couple of days about the partnership between Sam Altman and Ivy. Ivy was the kind of creator of the iPhone, you know, and they've got this partnership of this secret device. We don't know what yet, but we know it becomes an integral part of your life, probably through a cell phone, and it must read this and that and your thoughts or whatever it does. Now, there's three problems with AI. Number one, and I've had people say this, well, the government, forget the government and AI. If anybody feels secure because the federal government will regulate AI, have another day. You know, the government makes mistakes anyway on top of it. Plus, the government can make, as you say, this one swoop of law that, you know, protects AI and has no panels out there, no bumpers for protection of people. And then the second thing about AI is the sociological aspect of it, because nobody's thinking ahead hardly of the working people. You know, not everybody can go to college. Not everybody can be a computer person. If they had a gun to my head and say, do something advanced with the computer, we're going to shoot you, I'll be in a body bag.
Well, that's why you get AI. AI can do it for you.
AI can do it for it. But so people aren't going to have the jobs they used to have. And sociologically, what happens to these people? How do they raise families? I mean, there's a whole issue there. And the third issue is what I agree totally with you. And I know we sounds like we probably wrote one of the Terminator movies, but we, if this continues unbridled, I think we are particularly doomed to create something that's going to look at us and say, I don't think I need them.
They're already saying these computer programs are learning. My truck, for instance, you know, I have a Ford F-150. It learned that I don't wear my seatbelt all the time, and it stopped dinging. It just stopped. It's the weirdest thing. I always put the truck in neutral before I put the parking brake on the hill, so it sits on the brakes. The thing put it in the park for me. I mean, you know, it's already decided that it doesn't need me, which is the scary thing. And it's all this lane assist stuff. Not good in my view. Not technology helpful. This stuff, not good, especially when you're talking about the kind of integration that I think you're alluding to. You know, our cell phones know so much about us. Now you throw on AI and the collection of data and the collection of keystrokes not good. And certainly not a time to say we're not going to regulate it for the next decade. Then I think it's already out of control. A next decade, it's over.
Right. And if you rely on the government, you know, people say, well, you know, the feds now can make law and the states, you know, can't, quote, interfere. Well, that may, what that will turn on the public, because the government is not going to pay attention to the needs and what's best for.
No, look how far behind we are right now. Look how far behind we are on all of this stuff. And it's all by design, man. It's not good. Last question I've got for you, you know, in looking at this stuff, because you alluded to it there a moment ago. There was a study done about 5 years ago that said the next 20 years, half of all the jobs we do will be gone because of AI and robotics and automation and all of that. Politically, what can be done? You know, you spent time in Congress. Do you have any hope?
I think they would need, you know, to, and I even dread saying this, but some type of study committee, because I don't want it studied and thrown in the waste can, but some type of deep, in-depth look at where we're going to head and how we're going to cope with it. Now, the reason I say that, and I'm going to say this with kindness, you know, because I'm going to talk about for a second here, my grandfather. My grandfather was a glass worker at the Imperial Glass Company. They took him out of school at the age of 10, which thank goodness you can't do that anymore. And they had him work full time. He worked full time from the age of 10 to the age of 73 at the Imperial Glass Company. He was able to raise, five kids, able to be part of his community. Was he able to be a degreed college person? No. Does that mean he was not smart? No. That doesn't mean he was dumb. But my grandfather was, you know, a blue-collar worker. And there are other jobs. I mean, what are they going to do when all of a sudden the AI machine hangs drywall? I mean, this can be endless. somebody, and I don't know the answer to it, but somebody in positions of power need to start thinking about where we're going to go. Because like I said, sociologically, you're going to have millions of people. And what on earth are they going to do? You're going to try to train them all to be engineers, you know, information, high-tech engineers? Please, that's not how our society works. And I'm just afraid of what happens to those people and how do they end up and what type of future do they have?
And the political unrest that comes with it, unfortunately, because when, when people start having a hard time putting food on the table, bad things happen. But Bob, as always, I appreciate the time. I'd like to say good stuff, but not really. Thanks so much, Bob Ney. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you concerned about the AI future? Are you concerned about what's coming? Or are you excited about it? I've got a few friends who are excited about the possibilities of the new frontier. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Isolated showers this evening, otherwise mostly cloudy tonight, to low in the low 50s. For tomorrow, partly sunny, maybe a pop-up storm and highs in the low 70s. Heating up this weekend, 70s and some 80s. Lots of sunshine and it stays dry. It's 55 right now.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Hans Breitenmoser, we have people in Congress right now cutting food assistance.
All of it is a disregard for how the economy actually works. When you plant seeds in the ground, you get money close to the ground. That's what makes rural economies work. Urban economies are very similar in that regard. Washington is only as good as its participants, and we've got some real dandies there these days.
That's definitely one way to put it.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I've been saying for a long time, the one thing I do agree with Donald Trump on is the idea that we need to reshore manufacturing. The one thing I agreed with my deplorable family over when they voted for him was, yeah, we do need to recreate Brook Park Avenue. We need Ford and Chevy to be booming again. We need all those feeder plants that were paying great wages with great benefits that supported families. We need those back again. Yeah, we need a manufacturing renaissance. We do. And there's everybody, red hat, blue hat, green hat, everybody in between agrees we should be making more stuff. My problem, it's again, you know, the blind squirrel found the nut. It's what is he going to do with the nut? And that's been my problem with Trump all along. While he has been the blind squirrel with the nut, he's kind of taken a dump all over it. And here to share some thoughts on when he talks about manufacturing and the red hats get all excited, is he really going to bring back manufacturing? That's why I've asked my good friend Mike Williams to come share some thoughts. Mike's a senior fellow over at the Center for American Progress, where he focuses on domestic climate. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. It is always a pleasure.
So, as I said, look, I agreed with Trump in 2015 when he stole Bernie Sanders' lines that we need to reshore manufacturing. We need to recreate that economy that was the most prosperous for the working class in the history of humanity. I was there. It was just everything else I was opposed to. And we're back there again talking about manufacturing and really not only no plan, but a really bad one.
A really bad one. Yeah, if we could rewind the tape, just like you're doing, he leaned really hard in that time in 2016 into infrastructure. America's infrastructure sucks. And, you know, our manufacturing is in a bad place. And we're going to fix our infrastructure and bring back manufacturing. And during his first term, he didn't do either. And in fact, every other week, maybe every week, was infrastructure week, and he didn't do anything.
A lot of good pictures. Photo ops.
A lot of good pictures, not a lot of jobs with that. And so with infrastructure, as we know, Joe Biden fixed it and passed it bipartisan through Congress. With manufacturing, kind of the same thing happened. Our manufacturing jobs, our industries, we're sputtering along, and especially the very key industries that are going to drive manufacturing globally for the next generation. We had no foothold in a bunch of them. Semiconductors, electric vehicle batteries, solar panels, so on and so forth. And because of the Inflation Reduction Act, we started to gain a serious foothold in both of those. We created tens of thousands of jobs. It was happening tremendously. We leveraged billions, if not hundreds of billions, of private sector investment. And it's getting all thrown away.
Oh, because Biden did it, right?
Must be. Because, Rick, you tell me. If you say you care about manufacturing, but then we have this evidence of a couple industries that have connection to a couple policies that are really driving a rebirth of domestic manufacturing, why would you get rid of them? Except for, oh, Joe Biden had his hand in that. Oh, therefore I must get rid of it. It makes no sense. Even if you don't believe that climate change is a crisis, let's set that aside. The investment in these industries is creating jobs and economic activity across the country. It's not just going to like blue states in Massachusetts and California. In fact, it's mostly going to red states.
Yep.
We're seeing huge solar panel facilities going, manufacturing facilities into Oklahoma, electric vehicle battery facilities in Tennessee and Georgia. This is an across the America boom that we are entering into. And the House Republicans, with their one big beautiful bill, and the president with his evisceration of the Department of Energy and supporting of this bill, are just going to pull the rug right out from under it.
And the thing that gets me is you brought up solar panels. You know, you go back to the Obama years, we made a significant investment in solar panels only to have Republicans come in, take control, and crush it again. This pendulum back and forth seems to be just wasting a whole bunch of money, where we're moving in a direction, we've got the country going, jobs are being created, we've got a path, and then all of a sudden we bring in the destroyer. In comes Trump and the Republicans, and they wreck all of it. So the pendulum goes back to the status quo. And again, I don't know how many times we can do this, how much we can waste going back and forth, but we, the working class, we're not benefiting from this.
Not at all. Again, if we can wind back the tape, rewind the clock. The United States invented solar panels.
Yep.
We invented the cells that make up solar panels. We invented how we create the modern photovoltaic solar panel. The United States invented that. We did not commercialize it because we didn't invest in the dang industries. The Germans beat us to it, and the Chinese have just catapulted us. Why? Because we didn't invest in the dang industries. Why? Because we decided that the free market was what's going to solve it completely, and therefore we shouldn't step in with the public sector, which was a failure.
Yeah, see, so I would argue even worse than that. I know we claim to have this allegiance to the free market, but this was a policy choice. Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the White House to heat the water and all of that, and in the pool and all the things that he did. The first act that Reagan did when he came in was rip that out and put in a good gas coal fire power system. Again, symbolic, but policy wise, these are choices mm-hmm. that Republicans have made over the years to move us away from technology that could have gotten us better off and further down the road and cleaner energy if that's your thing too. But jobs. Investment. I mean, just so I don't want to hear about free market, because that's where the market was going until we crushed it.
It's exactly right. And again, we can set aside whatever your opinion is on coal, oil, gas, solar, wind, whatever. Have your opinion about clean energy versus not clean energy. These were literally at the cutting edge of global technology. They, as have now been proven, we're going to be drivers of manufacturing industries and global supply chains. We would have been dominant had we stayed with it, stuck with our inventions and kept with our innovation and invested in these industries and invested in the manufacturing here and the working people here. But we didn't. We then had completely lost it. We completely lost the solar panel manufacturing industry. We had almost nothing until the early 2020s when we passed the Inflation Reduction Act. And by the way, it's not just incentives for people to put panels on their roofs. That's the thing about this. It's more than that. its incentives to actually support manufacturing facilities to build here right. in the U.S. with American-made components. Does that sound like a certain president who's sitting in the White House right now? We need American-made goods with American-made components here. That's what was happening. But again, to your point, Rick, it's a policy choice. It's a choice because he doesn't actually care about manufacturing. He doesn't care about manufacturing. He cares about his own ideology and that he gets credit for everything.
And look, I said from the beginning, I'm okay with, you know, take any policy, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, make it the Trump Care Act. Do what he did with NAFTA. You want NAFTA? Go ahead. Call it whatever you want. Just make sure that it's there for people. And this being the same thing, if you want to call it, you know, instead of electric vehicles, call it, you know, motorized vehicles, go ahead. Put Trump electric vehicles on it for all I care. It's just communities need those jobs. These are the jobs of the future. And again, if we lose another technology, another industry from a technology that we were heavy in creating, again, we're going to continue falling behind China and the rest of the world until eventually nothing's made here.
That's right. And the crazy thing is these cleaner energies happen to, on the long term, they're going to be quite a bit cheaper than the current alternative. So heating and cooling your home with a heat pump is already potentially cheaper than it is with oil or gas or just straight electricity for like the electric, you know, heaters. Using an EV over the long run, especially as the prices go down, is going to be a lot cheaper than a gas car. Are we going to use Chinese-made materials on all of this or not? We were on a path, we had pivoted, where there was going to be a lot of American-made options that were eventually going to be at cost or very soon to be cheaper for people. So working people are not only going to have cheaper goods that work well, that are made in America, it was going to be made by them or their friends and neighbors. Now it's going to be you either pay more or you're going to be buying a Chinese-made EV.
Yeah. And the weird thing about this, the weird thing for me is that, and I guess there's two ways of looking at this, because, you know, wasn't Doge Boy, you know, his right hand man? I mean, the weird thing is, you know, is this the will of Doge Boy or Elon Musk or not? Because you would think, you know, with all of that investment going in, it would be helpful to Tesla, or by having all this competition, you know, you make Tesla the king of all of this. I'm still going back and forth. You have a thought?
I have an opinion. Tesla was smart, and they jumped on EVs. They made them really, honestly, they made them really cool and really fast. I've driven a Tesla. They are really fast. They perform really well. And they got ahead, especially of the other American automakers, GM and Ford, and certainly ahead of the Japanese automakers. And so they jumped out, and so they became the brand for people who wanted EVs. Like, I'm going to get a Tesla. Then all of a sudden, the legacy automakers, so General Motors, Ford, and others, started making really good EVs. Chevy Bolt, now the F-150 Lightning, which is being rated as one of the best EVs in the world right now, caught up to them. But they were benefiting by these subsidies. The subsidies not only for consumers, but again, the subsidies to help build out battery plants that are going to supply the build out of these EVs. And Tesla had already made these investments. And so, well, yes, they do benefit from the consumer subsidies. They don't benefit as much as, say, the newer entrants into the EV market. That's my assumption of what's going on here. Okay. Because otherwise,
no, because that's where my mind's at. You want to crush the competition before it grows to actually compete. So that actually makes better sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's also something where, you know, Elon is a little off his rocker, maybe. And so he has decided that, yeah, I've made my money with Tesla, whatever. I have my ideology. Let's just keep going with MAGA land. That's the other possibility.
Yeah, I don't know about all of that, because who knows what goes on between that guy's ears? Because a lot of it just seems crazy. And all of the talk of we're going to save trillions of dollars, and well, never mind. We all know how that ended up, a massive failure. It's going to end up costing we, the taxpayers, you know, billions of dollars to clean up all the mess that they've done. And this, I want to get back to this because I think this is really important. I was excited about the future, much like I was excited for the future when I was a teenager. When Jimmy Carter put those solar panels on the White House, you know, that thought of all the sci-fi books I was reading of a future that, you know, you don't need dirty fuels and you know, basically, you know, you're living this Jetsons kind of lifestyle. We got a president who wants to run us right back into the Flintstones.
That's right. You know, and it's not just the like solar panels and wind turbines that people maybe are focusing on. It's across the board, the future clean energy technologies. So everything from advanced nuclear power to hydrogen to solar to wind to batteries, also to the processing of critical minerals. All of this is on the cutting table. So I don't understand. So the future of the steel industry is not going to be in blast furnaces. It is for the time being. So we definitely are not going to be going away from blast furnaces in the next 5 to 10 years. But after that, we need to see what the future is going to be for steel making. The U.S. is a steel making country. Are we going to be at the cutting edge of innovation? Or are we just going to be sitting back and be like, no, we will not give up what we have, while, again, China and India and Europe are just going to leap over us with cheaper, cleaner steel. We had investments in building out a hydrogen industry in the U.S. We were going to be one of the biggest hydrogen producers in the world, employing working people across the country who work in fossil fuel industries, making pipelines, doing refining. But no, we're pulling that away. And again, it boggles my mind, just to make an ideological point, like it was Joe Biden's, I guess, to just take that away from the future of our steel industry. So it's insanity.
So you hit a buzzword there, because, you know, all of my red hat friends are angry about the pipeline, and, you know, Democrats are against pipelines. Joe Biden's against pipelines. I'm told I'm against pipelines, and I'm like, no, I'm not against pipelines. I'm against what you're putting through those pipelines, and if it's good for us, the dirty tar sands oil coming out of Canada for the Keystone XL, I wasn't thrilled with. But the pipelines that move stuff around, I'm not opposed to entirely. How come Democrats didn't jump on what you just said, that, hey, look, we could have built those pipelines, put those pipeline workers to work doing this instead of the dirty stuff? Well, how come we don't hear that?
We could do a lot better in talking about the infrastructure we are building and we're building and setting up, and how the vision of the future, right? I mean, that's what this all gets to. The vision of the future isn't some utopia. It's like a slightly better version of what we got, right? And so it's still, we're building houses, we're building buildings, we're building roads, we're building bridges, we're building pipelines. It's just what's in them when what's going into our air. And so if we have control over our future, we can make sure that the things we're putting through those pipelines are clean, that our buildings use clean energy. And the same people who work on those buildings, who build them, who maintain them, still have jobs, and potentially better ones,
right?
Because they're not dealing with dirtier materials. They are part of, again, a global supply chain that is employing people across the country. And so, yeah, no, I think we need to do better about framing what our vision is for now and in the future, that this is all of us that's part of this. I'm basically paraphrasing Bernie Sanders right now, because that was his message in 2016. This truly is about all of us. And yeah, no, I think we failed on that.
Messaging wise, Democrats have done a really bad job of helping themselves. But again, they don't have the messaging vehicle. So not surprising. There's no left wing Fox News out there to bang the drum. But here's the thing. This is where working people have got to pick this up, because the pendulum is now swinging the opposite direction. The jobs that were going to be created, as you've pointed out, are probably going to be destroyed. And what they're going to bring us isn't, I haven't seen anything yet that says that we're going to replace all of the jobs lost with jobs that they're going to bring back from the past. Is there something, last question I've got, is there something in this big, beautiful bill that I'm missing that's going to be the renaissance of manufacturing that, you know, in 5 years they're going to come back and see, Donald Trump knew? Anything?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. We already know from the insecurity of the industry and the worry of the industry, we've lost over 60,000 jobs are delayed or threatened at this point because of what this administration has done over the last quarter. $50 billion or so in investments has slowed or stopped. And this bill pulls all the incentives that were supporting these industries out. And so let's game it out. The industries that are being supported by this bill are somewhat the oil industry, although I would argue that because you're pulling away the incentives for hydrogen, which is the future for the oil industry. And they know it because Exxon and Shell and all of them have huge investments in hydrogen. But the coal industry is like a number one winner. Coal industry doesn't provide major manufacturing opportunities. Just being straight with everybody here. Just being deadly honest. So I don't understand where all these jobs are going to come from if we're just pulling investments away. This magical fairy dust of the free market? Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You know, for me, what this also does, the other side of this is if you are a manufacturer and you want to invest in this country, you run because of the, you know, the Banana Republic style back and forth in policy. And it's not good for us.
Already happening. Europe is already seeing investment. Asia is seeing investment that we were going to get. It's already moving overseas. You can see fine anecdotes left and right, and it's going to pile on top of it. So, yeah, sorry to interrupt, but, like, I am animated about this, Rick. And we're screwing over working people once again in the U.S.
Sad stuff. Mike, appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. Mike Williams, Senior Fellow, Domestic Climate, over at the Center for American Progress. Check out their website and his new piece over at AmericanProgress.org. Mike, thanks so much. I'm going to take a quick break. I want to hear your thoughts. Smart policy is art of the deal, man, coming through for you. You feeling the love? I'm feeling it all right, but I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1882. That was the day that John Muir, a Scottish-American conservationist, founded the Sierra Club in San Francisco, California. The Sierra Club's purpose was to explore, enjoy, and protect the wild places of the earth. Today, the organization has more than 1 million members and is one of the most well-known environmental organizations on the planet. The labor movement and the environmental movements in the United States have not always had an easy relationship. Too often, politicians and the media have framed policy decisions as a choice between good jobs and a clean environment. But during the 1990s, some environmentalists and unionists began to break down this divide. Both groups opposed the North American Free Trade Agreement, arguing it would have a negative impact on both jobs and the environment. During the massive protests of the World Trade Organization in 1999 in Seattle, labor protested alongside environmental activists. One memorable tagline to come out of the protest was, "Turtles love Teamsters, Teamsters love turtles." Then, in 2006, the Sierra Club partnered with the United Steelworkers to launch the Blue-Green Alliance. The effort joins together blue-collar workers with green environmental justice groups. The partnership seeks to supply policy and education about sustainable job growth in fields such as clean energy. Multiple environmental groups and unions, including the American Federation of Teachers, the Communication Workers of America, the Service Employees International Union, and the United Auto Workers, have signed on to the effort. But it's not always easy to keep the two causes united. In 2012, the Laborers Union left the alliance due to disagreements over the Keystone XL pipeline. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, as a kid growing up, I remember the Carter presidency pretty well. I remember the talk of the time is that we were going to push technology. We were going to push the envelope. We were going to lead that Jetsons kind of existence that I remember, thinking, wow, this is going to be great. We're going to have all this technology. All this stuff is going to be fabulous. Life is going to get easier. And we're going to get away from the Flintstones. We're going to be the Jetsons. The possibilities We're going to be endless. Life was going to be great. Increased productivity, we're going to have all we wanted. The innovation was going to be so fast that you were going to spend all your time just keeping up. New jobs are going to be created. It was going to be utopia. It was going to be this wonderful thing. The quality of life was going to be just through the roof. We were going to live longer. We were going to have better lives. We're going to certainly not work as hard as our parents and our grandparents' generation. We were going to have all this stuff. We were going to be able to walk down the hall and the world was our oyster. Every billboard would be specifically targeted for us. Everything was about us. There would be reduced human error. It would be convenient, accessible 24/7. It was going to be great. And this is what we were sold. And when the solar panels came up, you go, hey, we're going to get off the oil. We don't have to worry about OPEC. We can be energy independent. It's going to be fabulous. And, well, Ronald Reagan came in and pulled the plug on that. And we've been hooked on oil ever since. And as Mike Williams said, look, the future technologies are out there. The oil industry's betting on what they're looking toward. But we're still stuck in that you know, the past. And that thinking that I grew up believing that the future will be better because technology is going to move us in that direction turned out to be wrong. Because what ended up happening? We end up losing communities. All these trade policies, get away from that dirty manufacturing. And what do? We cost millions of people their livelihoods. So we had massive job displacement, massive unemployment, and going to have this with AI as well. As the AI revolution comes on board, massive economic instability for working people. And you know, the future, and we're already seeing the articles that the next generations, they don't know how to communicate face-to-face. Social skills are going to suffer because you see entire families at the dinner table texting each other. Inequality is going to get worse. It's already getting worse. It's the person who controls the technology who's going to benefit. It's not going to be shared equally. Because understand, back when I was learning about this stuff, the top marginal tax rate was still 70%. Rich people were still paying a much higher tax rate. That's not there anymore. So we're seeing massive inequality, and it's only grown year after year. And as this takes hold, as this grabs us by the you-know-whats, it's going to get worse, which is going to lead to a social unrest and instability and who knows what, because we're a well-armed populace. And as I said earlier, when people can't put food on their table, when they are looking into their children's eyes and go, hey, I can't feed you, desperate people do desperate things. And with desperation comes destruction. And we're sadly, we're like on the verge of this. Look, I would argue a good part of what Trump's appeal has been is a place to put that anger for families who have been struggling or believe that they're struggling where they don't have to. All because we've made political choices for rich people. And the idea that we're now going to have a uber rich little kitchen cabinet for Trump to choose from. And we're not going to regulate AI, and we're not going to restrain the damage of this new technology. Look, in every, and this is not new, in every transition period, there is pain and suffering that goes around. And unfortunately, it usually hits the working class. The upper crust, they're the ones who benefit from this. So when you talk about who are the winners and who are the losers, in this, the winners are going to be a handful of tech bros, a handful of crypto bros, a handful of extraordinarily well-connected because they can afford to buy in. And who are going to be the ones who suffer? It's going to be you and me, the working class. And even if you're not totally destroyed by this, you got to ask yourself, the constant accumulation of your data, Doge Boy and his ferrets stealing all of your information from our government. The kind of information theft that's going to come from an integrated iPhone or cell phone that's going to literally take everything you say, see, and do and analyze it and sell it back to you at a price. You got to ask, you know, what are the ethical and privacy concerns that are going to come from the misuse of data? And the fact that, you know, privacy, that's going to be a thing of the past. Now, understand, my kids, they already think privacy is a thing of the past. Question is how do we slow this down? Or should we? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Tell me what you think. Are you on the, hey, I'm excited about AI? Or like me, yeah, it's time to start smashing machines. I want to hear your thoughts, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio. WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A federal court strikes down what President Trump calls his Liberation Day tariffs. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson says of the ruling,
I expect that President Trump may try to get this issue before the Supreme Court as well, because it is a significant blow to what he has tried to do in office by imposing high tariffs on everyone from China to Canada to Mexico and even the EU. And even though he's claimed that he has the right to use emergency tariffs, this court has said he does not.
Elon Musk says on social media that his time as a special government employee is coming to an end. Musk says he believes that the DOGE task force mission, which has already cut government employees and contracts at almost every federal agency, will only strengthen over time. President Trump signs off on a full pardon for former GOP Congressman Michael Grimm of New York, who was convicted in 2014 of tax fraud.